You were on page 6 of James, chapter 1 lesson. Everybody has their lessons? I don't have to hand any more out. We had begun last class looking at some definitions, defining trials and temptations, the differences between them. And we left off on part A of number 2, where we were looking at instances where the different words, the different definitions of the words we looked at, trial, tempt, entice, where they overlapped. And we discussed that. We said, yes, they do. They can mean the same thing, and there's overlap of meaning, but they can also have their own unique meaning. And in one sense, all those words, trial and tempt, to entice, have a connotation of sin, to be tempted to sin, to be, you know, to lure to sin. And yet, in some cases, there are definitions where sin is not involved. I was going to look at a couple instances in the Bible, in the Scriptures. John 6, verse 6. That's as far as I got last time. I said it, and we didn't turn there. John 6:6, or beginning just before that. Then Jesus lifted up his eyes, and seeing a great multitude coming toward him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread that these may eat?" But this he said to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. And so here he's putting Philip to the test. And it's not a test of sin or not sin, just as we discuss in definitions, of proving of his quality. In this case, it's probably a proving of his faith. And then also in 2 Corinthians 13:5. Verse 5 of 2 Corinthians 13. Examine yourselves as to whether you are in the faith. Test yourselves. Do you not know yourselves that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you are disqualified? And of course, here again is not a thought of testing oneself to see if you'd sin or not. It's just testing as a matter of verifying, proving yourself. finding the qualities, or assume, in one difference, either verifying the quality or value of something. So hopefully we have a good understanding of what the different definitions mean, because we need to be careful when looking in James, because there's, in some cases, a shift between one and the other, and you need to be aware of that. So, I had a question. How can, looking at the following scriptures, what are some ways that trials can be manifested? And this is 3, verse part A. Look at James 1:14. Someone wants to read that for us.
But each one is tempted when he is carried away and enticed by his own lust.
Yes, thank you. Also look at Proverbs 7:21-7. Job 7:21. Proverbs 7:21. With her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. Immediately, he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks. Till an arrow struck his liver, and as a bird hastens to the snare, he did not know it would cost his life. So now, therefore, listen to me, my children. Pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways, and do not stray into her paths, for she has cast down many wounded, and all who were slain by her were strong men. Her house is the way to hell, descending to the chambers of death. And also in Luke chapter 4.
You know, the way that there were some of the temptations that were manifested there, up in the upper part of the reading, it talks about her speech and the touch and the atmosphere. And, you know, that's, she used all these ploys to entice this young man, to tempt him, to get him to commit adultery with her. And the speech, you know, the flattering lips and things like that. And he was so naive that he didn't have a clue, you know, about what was going on until it was too late.
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. And so what is this manifestation of this, these trials that we're reading these verses?
The person's own lust.
Yes, it's a matter of lust. In Proverbs, it's a matter of lust. And yeah, in James, it mentions lust, but also desires. It's the desires or lust. And you mentioned the own person's desires. We're going to look at Luke 4. Luke 4, I'm not going to read all the verses I listed there, but is the temptation of Jesus. And I'm going to read the first few. Then Jesus, being filled with the Holy Spirit, returned from the Jordan and was led by the Spirit into the wilderness, being tempted for 40 days by the devil. And in those days he ate nothing, and afterward, when they had ended, he was hungry. And the devil said to him, "If you are the Son of God, command this stone to become bread." And of course Jesus answered him, "No, I'm not doing it." And then in verse 5, the devil, taking up on a high mountain, showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And the devil said to him, "All this authority I will give to you and their glory, for this has been delivered to me, and I give it to whomever I wish. Therefore, if you will worship before me, all will be yours." And there, does that change, I guess, the way the man, this manifestation of trials that we're discussing?
Yeah, it's a different... It's not lust, but it's more of like an ego, pride, maybe.
Yeah, I'm using it as, to help clarify. Go ahead.
In 1 John 2:16, the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, the pride of life. Same that was in the garden, same the devil used against Jesus, same that John the apostle says that we are tempted to death.
Yes. But I'm looking, I guess that's absolutely correct. But looking at Jesus' temptation, Jesus was tempted. He was faced with a trial.
It's by the devil.
Yes, it's by the devil. But was this, was there, did he have any lust or desire?
From Jesus?
Yes.
He didn't fall into doing it or anything.
No, he didn't commit it, but neither did he have the desire for it either. Because Jesus, you know, we're about to get there.
He didn't give in to Satan.
Yeah, he doesn't give in to Satan. What I'm trying to present to you is the intent was to lure him to, you know, here he was hungry. Hey, have some bread. The intent was to lure him. Here, look, you can have power. There's that intent, whether he had that desire or not. And of course, many of the other verses we looked at in James and, of course, in Proverbs is dealing with men where there is that intent to lure them. And of course, as men, sometimes you fall away and you have these desires and then you turn and you fall. Which of course, Jesus wouldn't do.
Would you say it would be safe to say, because of the situation with Jesus, no, he was not like the young, naive kid in Proverbs who intentionally walked by her house, where there was that weakness, that intentional weakness that was easier for her to draw him in. And with the situation with Satan tempting Jesus, he didn't have, there was nothing, I don't know the word I'm looking for. It was a weakness at the moment where he was hungry. That Satan, that allowed Satan to tempt him easier, even though he didn't fall into that. So, I'm not saying this right, never mind.
He's choosing his most opportune moment where someone
during the
could,
weakness at the moment.
Someone could be weak to it. What I was trying to get to was, you can be tempted whether you have that desire or not.
Right.
If someone's trying to sell you something, I don't want it. But if they try to sell it to you, they're still trying to sell it to you, whether you had the desire for it or whether you didn't have desire for it. So you can be tempted to sin whether you actually had that craving for it or whether you didn't. And, of course, if you don't, hopefully you should be able to resist it. And you should be able to resist it even if you did have the desire. But what I'm trying to get at is that you can be tempted, and that desire may or may not be present within you. You're tempted regardless.
Donna's making an interesting point that, a lot of times as humans, we want to be compassionate and say, oh, well, that person's going through a hard time, or, that's really difficult, so it's okay that they did this or they acted this way. And Jesus is supposed to be our example, and he didn't give in to it. And so, yes, we should be compassionate toward that person, but we shouldn't be making excuses. And I've also heard that, some of us are like, well, as far as women, I guess I just took this to heart because it was the women, but some of us are like Eve, and some of us are like Job's wife. Eve had everything going well for her, and she still sinned, whereas Job's wife had everything going horribly for her, and she still sinned. So we can sin in all circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. When someone's are facing more difficult or weakened time, I would say it's okay, but you're more understanding given that in your situation that was perhaps more difficult than usual. You can be understanding without being accepting. I guess that's what you're saying, right?
But Jesus was tempted to do wrong, but he couldn't be our high priest, Hebrews 4 says, that if he didn't have our weaknesses and tempted in every way that we were, but he did not sin. But he also suffered trial, none of which was his doing. Even with the cross, he suffered trials due to the influences of outside forces, not a temptation of his own making or doing, that were temptations and sin. Evidently, giving in to the temptation. So, a trial and temptation that Jesus suffered are two different things, and that. He suffered trials, but he was tempted and he did not give in to the temptation.
Yes. Thank you.
Men and women have sexual desires. There's nothing wrong with that. It's how you fulfill desires. Jesus was hungry. Luke 4 verse 2 says he became hungry. He was hungry. There was a need there. He had a sensation, a physical sensation, a need. There's nothing wrong with that. The devil tried to use that. The devil recognized, hey, here's a guy that's been in the wilderness for some time and he's not been eating. I'm going to use that to my advantage. Okay, it didn't work. Jesus didn't respond the way the devil expected. The devil tried to use that need, which is right within itself, to try to get him to do something else. So, separate how we react to the desire or the need from the desire or need, I think, is important. Now, there are some things that are wrong, and they're always wrong in themselves, and that's just understood, but There's nothing wrong with many desires that can turn out to be a problem for us because we're not mature enough on how to handle them.
Yes. Mike?
If I understood you earlier, I think you stated it correctly, and I think what Rod said is correct. It says that Jesus was hungry. It does not say he was weak spiritually or that his faith was weak. So it does not state that the temptation by Satan put before him was something that he had to consider. Ooh, should I do that? Should I not? That sounds awfully good, Satan. Let me think about that. No, I don't think about it. And here's why. I don't know that that's what was going through Jesus' mind. He was hungry physically, weak physically. Spiritually, I don't see that here. So in that light, to say that he was considering that, and I used to believe he did. I used to believe that that was the idea of temptation, that he was actually considering doing that.
Yeah.
Because that's what we do when we're tempted.
We have the desire to sin.
But obviously he didn't have the desire to sin, you know, to use those words.
Yes.
But he was faced with sin. And other passages that talk about, you know, temptations with him, I don't necessarily take those to mean that he considered it, that it was, ooh, I might do that. But that it was before him. It was available to him. And he could have gone that route. But he was God.
Yes.
He was not just man. He was God.
I agree with you. And we're going to get into that a little bit more in James. And I guess some of the comments I want to try to clarify a little bit, because here we're looking at, we get the gist of these trials is a matter of facing desire. And desire itself doesn't necessarily mean anything wrong. We desire for food because our bodies need food. And, you know, there's other desires for lust. They're okay. But then there's other manners in which it's not acceptable. And so there's confusion sometimes where you think of trials where you're faced with the desire. There's a desire to fulfill a need, which is nothing wrong in and of itself, but in the wrong context it can become sin. And then there's other cases where, yeah, that in that wrong context, someone's desiring for something, knowing it is sin, and they're desiring something that's sinful. And so you get to break up that distinction between the desire for sin and the desire for something that is not sin in and of itself, but yeah, in the wrong manner could become sin. Yes, these things were desire for food, desire for power, or lust. You know, this intent to these trials were intent to lure by those desires for the gain of something, of these things we mentioned. Thanks for all those good comments. Top of page 7. We look to Hebrews 11:36. Someone want to read 11:36-38 for me, please?
And others experienced mockings, scourgings, yes, also chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were tempted. They were put to death with the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, ill-treated. Men of whom the world was not worthy, wandering in the deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground.
And also 1 Peter 4:12-14. First Peter 12:14, in chapter 4. Someone get that?
Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for your testing, as though some strange thing were happening to you. But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing, so that also at the revelation of his glory you may rejoice with exultation. If you are reviled for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the spirit of glory in the God rests on you.
Thank you. So these pair of verses, or a pair of passages, what ways have we seen trials come upon
suffering as suffering. A Christian.
Suffering as a Christian. And more, at least, you've nailed it. Suffering. But what examples of suffering have we seen?
Physical.
Yeah. Some are physical.
Emotional, maybe.
Yeah, some are in Peter's, some level of verbal assault as well, some emotional. But yeah, in Hebrews you see a lot of physical things. You know, some mocking, well that's verbal mocking, but scourging, imprisonment, different ways of being put to death. And of course, you know, that's a trial. I guess in some ways it leads back to a desire. Desire that you don't want that stuff happening to you. But, you know, in trying to get away from that level of suffering, you know, it is a trial because sometimes it can lead you to the wrong course of action depending on how it's coming, for what reason it's coming upon you. Such as these men and women were put under this suffering for the purpose of renouncing, being forced to renounce God or Christ, which they wouldn't do. Look back at James 1, verse 10 through 12. Verse 10 to 12, but the rich in his humiliation, because as a flower of the field he will pass away. For no sooner has the sun risen with a burning heat than it withers the grass, and its flower falls, and its beautiful appearance perishes. So the rich man will also fade away in his pursuits. And I accompany that with Matthew 19 and 24. Matthew 19 and 24, Jesus is telling them, and again I say to you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. So, what way am I suggesting trials are manifested here in these passages?
The riches.
And most people don't think of riches as a trial, but how... Why could this be considered a trial?
A lot of times it messes up your priorities.
That's exactly right.
It's what you put your trust in. In fact, I found it interesting. Verse 9, but the brother of humble circumstances glory in his high position. You know, there are folks who are on the poor side, who have the same lust or desire to be rich, you know, than the riches, you know, trusting in their riches, you know, they may be tempted also. And so I think it hits both sides of the economic
spectrum. There. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the case. I mean, and, you know, we bring it up because we're talking about the trials and temptations in this first portion of James, the first chapter, and yet he goes into, hey, here's some rich people. Don't worry about them because, you know, we're assuming, not, this is a generic sense, these guys are in trouble because of their riches, because of, as we said, because of their trust. They put their trust in riches and not in a trust in God, a faith in God, and they're going to pass away. And like we read with Jesus and Matthew, it's hard for the rich to get to heaven because of this trial, this test of they've been given riches and it's affected their thinking. I also wanted to look at 1 Timothy 6:17. It says in 1 Timothy 6:17, command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who gives us richly all the things to enjoy. We see here this warning against that attitude that those who have possessions can, instead of trusting God, trust in the assets they have here on earth to protect them. you know, I'm okay because I've got plenty of stuff, you know, fields to provide for me, or, you know, things to see me through the tough times. You know, that's a, of course, you know, knowledgeable, you know, that can all be stripped away. And the one who relies on him will pass away with it. James 1:9, we already started getting in there. I'll read again, let the lowly brother glory in his exaltation. And also in Romans 8:35. Someone want to read verse 35 of chapter 8?
Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword?
And of course, there's some intermixing of these ways that trials occur, but I think you know which direct, what words I'm looking at leaning for here. Yes, poverty. You know, as Linda mentioned in verse 9 of James, it's talking about let the lowly brother exalt in glory in his exaltation versus, you know, just proceeding, following that in 10 and 11, here's the rich man. So here's the lowly man who doesn't have as much. And in 35 of Romans, what I was trying to get at is you see some of these things in famine and nakedness. This the idea of want. There's a lack, and also we saw some of the same things in Hebrews 11:36 that we read earlier. Along with all those physical sufferings, there was also mention of being destitute, being hungry, and so poverty or can be poverty is a trial. You know, what can that lead someone? How can that try someone?
One of my favorite verses is Proverbs 30, verses 7-9. It's a prayer. Two things I asked of you. Do not refuse me before I die. Keep deception and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is my portion, that I not be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or that I not be in want and steal and profane the name of my God.
That's a powerful verse.
Mm-hmm. Proverbs 30:7-9. Thank you, Jamie. Yeah, we see in riches, you have the potential to trust in those riches and not in God. In poverty, you have the same, or some form, the same deal. Your lack of trust in God leads you to find your own way out, and through theft or you know, potentially, you know, there's lots of ways someone could try to get out of poverty. Theft is, you know, a lot of people resort to, and also leads to other things, you know, other sinful activities, or just a lack of behavior that is in line with a good character in order to, you know, to same thing, to fill your wants, to fill what you're lacking. And it's a good place to be, right in the middle, where you don't have too much, you don't have too little, and, you know, don't struggle for more if you're content. I guess it's, as Daniel mentioned, it's strive to be content. Don't put on yourself more trials by going too far in either direction. So we've seen some of these ways that trials are manifested, and we've looked at the definitions both in some of the scriptures and, you know, in man's terminology. I want to look at, hearing back to James and beginning to verses 2 and 3 and also 13 and 15, try to answer the question, what are some of the important differences here between trials and temptations? In verse 2 and 3, it says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. And read 12 through 15. Blessed is the man who endures temptation, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death.
In your verse 12, you have, blessed is the man who
endures temptation.
And in verse 2, you have, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter
trials.
Okay. Because mine says trials in both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Blessed is the man who perseveres under trial.
And remember, if I looked at definitions, that
right.
One can mean the exact same thing as the other.
Right.
But within the context of James, there's a difference between verse 2 and 3, the words used in verse 2 and 3, and between the words used in 13 and 14. What would be those differences?
Well, in 2 and 3, they're withstanding. They're And then in 12 and 13, they're giving in.
Yes. Well, in 12, it doesn't, but 13
right.
is the opposite
yes.
side, where
yes. 13.
It does give in.
Right,
you're
enduring, because you want
to
be right with God.
Yes. I know it gets rather tricky here. We're looking at sort of the same words. Any other thoughts?
You know, I think of, and this is just me, my thoughts. In verse 2 and 3, I think of, you know, they say diamonds are formed under extreme pressure. And diamonds are generally regarded as something beautiful, but to get that beautiful something, there's extreme force and extreme pressure to create that beautiful, if it doesn't break. And then, so that's what I kind of think of in verse 2 and 3, that if you can just hang on and not break, then there's going to be something beautiful that you can't see on the other side. And then in verse 13, with the temptation, that is where that slight flaw in all that pressure, and then you break, where you get both sides. Like I said, that was just me.
Those big thoughts.
Oh, there's a dog out there.
So?
Trying to push the door open.
Who is it?
It's a ghost.
Sorry.
I'd like to, I guess, look at verse 14, where it says, "But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires." So is that the same, if you want to say tempted, is that the same term that's used in 2, where it says, "Count it a joy to fall into trials, knowing that this testing produces patience." So are those the same terms being used, or the same meaning behind those terms? If not, how are we differentiating between the two?
Well,
I don't know that I would. I struggle with the looking at them as the same, because there are times when people are going through trials and struggles, and it has nothing to do with your own personal lust.
Correct. I'm not saying they are the same. I'm saying they're different.
Okay.
How are they different? Yes, I wasn't saying why are they the same. I'm saying why are they different. They're using some the same terms. Like yours, I don't know if it was that verse, but you had said it. You just uses trials in both places,
mm-hmm.
up above and below. Mine uses temptations pretty much exclusively in 12 through 15, but uses trials in 2 and 3. But...
Well, trials might be something like, you know, family issues. You're having to go through family issues, and it's not anything that having to do with your desires. I mean, it's just something, some things that just happen in your life that you don't have any control over. You know, like a long illness or something like that. That, to me, is trial.
Yes. You're on the right path.
So what these people are people who've been dispersed and persecuted because of their faith. That's who he's writing to, first of all. So these people have got trials. They left their home. They don't have jobs. They don't have, you know, they're sojourners in a foreign place. And they're Jews and a Gentile. And so they're going to suffer. Not only that, but they're Christians. And so they're suffering trials. They're suffering those things. Some of those things that we talked about, some things that Paul suffered. And so they're going to encounter all these things. And how are you going to respond to it?
Yeah. Jenny, you started to comment?
I guess what I thought you were trying to say is that trials usually come from outside and temptations usually come from inside yourself. Like that's the source of the temptation or the trial. Usually when we think of a trial, it's something that's outside of ourselves happening to us. And then a temptation is coming from our own desires, our own self.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I was looking at. In verse 14, where it says, each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires. And you know, just as Susan said and Jamie said, the trials are things that aren't any way, may or may not be related to anything sinful at all. They're something you're going through. Dealing with it leads to patience. The temptations in verse 14, 15, there are something that's spawning from the desires that one individual already has, this lust. And then when confronted with, I guess, with the potential to fulfill it, you know, well, if you do, that's sin leading to death. And, you know, that's, I didn't realize it was going to be so difficult. I guess it is difficult because of just the wording, using the same words, but trying to extract the two different meanings from these phrases. And we've looked at, you know, in the definitions, there's the test and trials, which can mean just proving, verifying the quality of something, you know, whether it be, you know, gold, how valuable it is, how pure it is, the purity of your faith or your character to, you know, withstand, you know, difficulties. And then there is the temptations, which can be the enticement to sin in, you know, someone's struggle resisting the desires they wish to fill in a sinful manner. And I think that's what we're seeing the difference here. And moreover, what does it say about those temptations in 13?
They're not from God.
Yeah, these aren't from God, are they? It doesn't say specifically in verse 2 or 3 whether those trials are from God, but we see that, you know, we know that God tests us to prove us, and in that, the testing in verse 2 and 3 is, hey, be joyful for that test, because through that test, something good will come out of it. And the one down below is, no, this one's not from God at all. This one's from you. this is from your evil desires and your own lusts, you know.
Maybe what's complicating things for us here is we're trying to make these words too exact. Verse 13, let no one say when he's tempted, I am tempted of God. It doesn't say, let no one say, I don't have desires. I do have desires. Temptation is when the desire is so strong, lust, that it prompts me to do which is wrong, sin.
Yes.
And that's all this is saying, is that whether it's family, whether it's food, whether it's freedom, whether it's whatever it is, if you let that take you to a place where you now have got things out of balance, you've sinned. But the basic desire where you start from isn't necessarily right or wrong. And I think that's why it's being said in verse 13. God gives us the desires we have. They don't come from me, they come from God. What I do with them comes entirely from me. And that's when I can make a desire become a lust. It's so strong of a desire, it prompts me to sin. I allow it to sin.
Yeah.
It conceives.
Yes. I guess it's falling back into that. There are desires that are good, and then there are desires which are bad, inherently bad. And we could say, we might get mixed up in this desire term. It seems to me that the temptations here that don't come from God are the desires that are inherently wrong.
You know, and I've heard that said before, Michael, but think about it. How many desires are inherently wrong? I mean, you take something back to its root, and I wonder if it doesn't come from something that really is right within itself. Stealing.
Within a crew.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Stealing. Okay. That's wrong. Not to want what you take. There may not be anything wrong with having what you unlawfully get. So there's the basic desire to have something, even the very basic, I love myself, that's from God. The Bible teaches me that. It's how I go about satisfying that. So even stealing is wrong. I don't want to overanalyze this, but I think maybe we try to make this more difficult than what it is.
It's, I don't know. I understand where you're coming from. It's just trying to stem everything back to a desire that is not wrong in and of itself, but fulfilling that desire, the manner in which they choose is wrong. I don't know. It seems like I've seen people desire things they desire to do wrong merely for the sake of doing wrong. There are people who steal who have no reason to steal. They want to steal. I don't know why they do that. Or desire to hurt people. Why do people...
Just to see people get hurt.
Yes.
They want power or authority over them.